This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is. Anthony Rivera here with you, talking about all the news and happening surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets. It's the Subway to Shea podcast, episode 139 from the Subway to Shea studios in my office. First things first, huge thank you to Brian Wright, Mets historian and author who came on the show. He's a content creator for Retro MLB. I don't know if you saw my post, but I did a collaboration with him on Doc Gooden before his number retirement ceremony. So we did a nice little video on the rookie season for Doc Gooden. I did the narration and he did all the edits and the cutting and the clipping, and it just came out awesome and I really enjoyed it, and I hope you did as well. Thank you to Brian for also coming on the podcast last week. We did a whole thing on Doc Gooden right before his number retirement during this past weekend, and we're going to react to that. And I thought I'd bring on a good friend of mine since the beginning of my podcast. We've been friends on Instagram for a while now. We meet up at games. We were both at the Mets game on Sunday, and that is Carlos, aka Vintage Mets, in the house. How you doing, my friend? Welcome officially for the first time to the Subway to Shea podcast.
Yo, shout out to you, Anthony. Shout out to the whole Subway to Shea fan base. Thank you guys for having me on, man. I appreciate being on here. I love what you're doing, man.
It was so great to see you, man, on Sunday to honor the career of Doc Gooden in a Mets uniform, getting his number 16 retired. Very emotional. I mean, I talked about this in the past. I didn't get to see Doc play. The first time I ever saw Doc play was at Shea Stadium, but in a Yankees uniform. They had a little day-night doubleheader against the Yankees in the Subway Series, and that was the first time I ever saw Doc pitch in Shea Stadium. So, you know, for fans back in the 80s, I could only imagine how they were feeling, because I was getting emotional for him. And, you know, the fact that probably about an hour before the ceremony got started, we saw Darryl Strawberry return after his, you know, his heart attack. Yeah, surprise and great ovation. You got, you know, Gary Sheffield was there, his nephew. You had Keith and Ron and a lot of the 86 guys, Rafael Santana, Lee Mazzilli, Jesse Orosco. I mean, the list goes on and on of all the attendees that were there. His entire family was there. It was just a great experience. I know it rained. I know it wasn't a sold out crowd, but the crowd that was there was just loving it and loving Doc. And it's great to see that final, you know, end, that final, I guess, period to the redemption arc for Doc Gooden. What was your thoughts and your reaction? Because you were there just as much as I was.
Very nice seeing you, bro. You know, every time I see you in the stadium, I always like to, you know, stop, say what's up, and, you know, tell you I like what you're doing in person, you know, not just on the internet. And, you know, you was with your dad, so shout out to your dad for you know, enjoying it with us. I hope he had a great time too. Initially, I felt like the crowd was you know, it wasn't a sold out crowd, and I felt like it wasn't what I thought it would be. You know, for Keith's retirement, it was insane. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not trying to compare the two, but I don't know if it was on a Sunday or if that it was gonna rain a little bit that deterred people, but initially, I don't know if it was just people walking around the stadium. I was like, damn, where everybody at? It started to fill out. And, you know, as they were announcing Doc and actually his family and, like you said, his past teammates, Lee Mazzilli, Mookie Wilson, to name a couple. Ron Darling and Keith were down there also. It started to rain. You know, it started to drizzle. And, you know, Doc came out and he had to, like, talk and say his speech in the rain. You know, one of the funny parts is when he mentioned about getting traded and not wanting to leave New York, the New York Mets, and ended up in the Bronx. And he mentioned the Yankees, the name, the Yankees. And the crowd was like, and Doc was like, no, I'm still a Met for life. Like, you know,
yeah.
And I felt like Darryl Strawberry probably took a note from that. It was like, do not mention that.
Yeah, he probably did. You know, it also felt like, man, this was really early to do this. Only a couple of weeks into the season. You would think it'd be, you know, warmer. They would kind of maybe spread one out June, July, August into those months. And, you know, obviously we'll get to see Darryl Strawberry. I think it's in June. I think it's
June 1st.
Right? June 1st.
June 1st, yes.
I'll be there.
I'll be there.
We'll see if that's a more sold out crowd for Darryl then. But like that story, you know, always intrigues me. And he only really mentioned it recently. Like he only talked about the fact that he tried time after time after time
to come back
to the Mets. And like, you know, to be fair, especially to the Wilpons, you know, I understand them not doing it. Yes. He had been given too many chances.
Yes. He had a bunch of stuff going on in his life. You know, it's well, you know, everybody knows.
Yeah, documented.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess they didn't want to go back to that, bring that kind of reputation and media attention back to the team. And I felt kind of bad listening to him basically telling us how he was saying that he'll come into the minor leagues, whatever he could do, league minimum, whatever it was, just to come back to kind of like just finish out his career here. You know, to just have that moment on Sunday, like that cherry on the top of his Mets career cake. You could see it in his eyes. I know it was raining, but
he,
you could see it in his eyes that he was getting teary eyed.
You heard it in his voice too.
Yes,
how teary. Could you imagine him coming back? You know, I know hindsight's 2020, but him coming back in 2000 with the Mets running for the pennant. Maybe he comes out of the bullpen or something, and you know, helps this team to a world championship over the New York Yankees. Could you just imagine the end of that career?
That'd have been insane. I never even thought that. That just came. You know, I never even thought about that, but that would have been insane, man.
And you know that's what? We really didn't see him put on a Mets jersey. I mentioned this last week with Brian until 2008 when they had the goodbye Shea, goodbye to Shea. And I got to say, man, at that time he had the most loudest ovation, because in 2006, I was there for the 20th anniversary and all the, you know, surprise was Darryl finally coming back, because he had not been back for over a decade and a half. So getting him back with something. I think Darryl was I think Doc was may have been in jail or he may have been sick at that time. I don't remember the whole 100% part of the story, but he wasn't able to make it. Then you go to 2008 and he's there for the, you know, Shea goodbye, and it was very nice to see the ovation that he got leading into now 2010. He gets inducted into the Hall of Fame with Doc and Davey and Frank Cashin, and then, you know, finally now the whole redemption arc's done. We got him his number retired and officially, you know, retiring as a Met.
As the rain started to fall, Doc started to, you know, walk off, and Howie Rose said, "Doc, you never let the rain bother you when you was pitching in Shea." Doc had a laugh. I found that pretty funny.
I'm so happy that there are, you know, there's YouTube out there so that I can at least go back and whether watch highlights. Some people put full games up there to see, but it's very nice to see, you know, things like that up there. And it was just a great whole day experience. And, you know, even the Mets, it was fitting, right? Like Jose Buto pitching that day, nine strikeouts
and six.
Yep. The team, 14 strikeouts total. It was just like an honor, an ode to Doc Gooden on that day.
Cynthia, Alex, Uncle Steve sitting there in the rain, you know, staying there and, you know, sitting it out. I really love to see that, man. I love the Coens and, you know, what they brought to this organization and how they're like trying to like build love back in here. You know what I'm saying? I feel like they care. You know, I mean, you could feel that they care. I really appreciate what they brought here.
Yeah. And it extends even to the team today. Look, before the homestand began, Steve Cohen posted a tweet about getting the fans out there to cheer for Lindor. And although Lindor had a couple of good games, he had a couple of two hitters, he really struggled
right now.
Yeah. Man. He's still struggling during this homestand, but to see the fans come out and cheer for him, you know, drown out the negativity that has kind of been surrounding this team, and to see the team go on this you know, 5-1 homestand. Because you remember last homestand, the beginning one, they were 1-5.
Yeah.
So they take care of business in Cincinnati and surprisingly in Atlanta, come home to two good teams. I mean, the Royals were really good coming in, and so were the Pirates, and beat them and take the series and complete homestand of 5-1. I thought was just outstanding. What takeaways did you take from these two series and this entire homestand?
I was in the barbershop, I think on Thursday. It was Friday. I think that's, did we start the homestand with the Royals on Friday?
Friday, yep.
So I'm in the barbershop and I'm talking to my barber and he's like, yo, the Royals are on like a 7-game winning streak. They were coming in on a 7-game winning streak. And the Mets, this Mets team, you know.
I'll say this too, before you go. The day before, they had put up a 9 spot in the first inning.
Yes.
That's how good they were doing.
Yes. Yeah. The Royals.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. That's what he was telling me. Yeah, yeah. And it was kind of like, hey, we just beat up on Atlanta, you know, our division rivals, the division, you know, and we're thinking in my head, I'm like, is this fool's gold? Because we just came off of an 0-5 homestand. Was this some luck? We're going to face the Royals who are coming in hot. And hey, we think we lost that first game.
They won game one.
And lost Saturday, yes.
They lost Saturday. And then Sean Manaea had a rough start. But just like in Atlanta, in game two in Atlanta, the Mets had some punch and some fight in them.
They came back.
They came back. But it was, yep.
This team is scrappy, man. You know, going 0-5, right? And then coming back. It's a different feel. This the fans, you could see it in the fans' faces. As you walk through the stadium, you could see the fans believing, smiling, cheering differently than they were the first 5 games. Because I was there for 3 of those 5 games. And you know, that's an infectious feeling. You start seeing people scream, you start to scream louder, and you know, you start to believe more. This team has been out of some games, but they're the comeback kings recently. Like these guys have some scrap and grit, and there's like no quit in this team.
Yeah, it's really great to see, especially at this moment in time with Nimmo not really playing well. Lindora is definitely tough.
Yeah.
McNeil.
Yes.
It's just been a struggle with, you know, the bats that we're supposed to be depending on and relying on struggling the way that they have been.
Yes. Even Pete, who had 2 home runs, I think that was Saturday's game. He's not at his best right now. Lindor, McNeil, Nimmo. There's a lot of players that are just coming through. You know, you got to give that to, you know, even Mendoza, who's putting pinch hitters in certain situations, having DJ Stewart, DH. DJ Stewart's been great. You know, he hasn't been great, but in times of need, he's come through for us in this homestand.
Yeah, definitely since that at bat in Atlanta where he hit the home run.
Straight to center field, right?
Yeah, it's I think that ever since then, he has totally been a different player. He's come in pinch hit spots and has delivered. You look at the contributions from all these unlikely sources, and it's really the bottom of the lineup, right? You're talking about DJ Stewart. You're talking about Harrison Bader. You're talking about Tyrone Taylor. Yeah. Everyone at the bottom of that lineup has been succeeding for this team and helping them, you know, get over the hump and get over 500. Harrison Bader, you know, 2 or 3 games in a row now, he has been playing so well. He had 2 big game winning hits from Sunday and Monday, had the big home run today. Tyrone Taylor had a big game himself that he went 3-for-4. You're talking about Joey Wendell, who had the big hit in game 2 against Pittsburgh.
Zach Short.
He's been playing a great defense out there. And, you know, especially when these guys that are supposed to be the core of the team are struggling, it's great to see everyone else contributing, because that's not what we saw last season, right? If Pete wasn't doing well, if Lindor wasn't doing well, you kind of knew that this team was losing, because the bottom of the order, whether it was Darren Ruff, Daniel Vogelback, whoever you wanted to throw at the bottom there, Luis Guillorme, the list goes on and on. It just wasn't working. It just felt like automatic outs, and you had to rely too much on Pete and Francisco. And at least at this point in time, we don't really have to worry about that.
I'll be honest with you. In the beginning of the season, I didn't like the way the lineup was being put. Having McNeil back cleanup, or having – I wasn't understanding it, right? Something changed. I don't know what happened. They switched it up. They put it how people felt like. And at one point in those first five games, like, this bottom of the order is over. It's clipped. Once you get – I guess they were trying to spread guys out.
Yeah.
I was sort of like a trust the process kind of thing and see the way Mendoza or Stearns, whoever it is, setting these lineups up, the way they're putting it together – these guys, they could have no runs throughout seven, down one, two, three runs, and these boys just, oh, here's a bloop, oh snap, a base hit, oh home run, oh we're going crazy.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because since we were both there on Sunday, the whole dynamic, because they were being shut out. Like Jose Budo was pitching a great
gem.
Game.
Oh.
He was pitching a gem, but the guy, I think it was Reagans, was pitching a gem as well for Kansas City. And not until the Mets brought in Brett Beatty into the lineup did that whole dynamic just seem to shift and better opportunities were happening with Beatty in that lineup. Did you kind of get that feeling as well?
It's something that I've been waiting on. Something that, you know, all of us fans been waiting on. You know what? We've been waiting for Beatty to click with Beatty. You know what I mean? And getting him in there, I feel like, yeah, I was excited to see him hit the ball around. A lot of people wanted him out of here. I'm going to be honest. A lot of people was ready to give up on Beatty. He's one of those unsung heroes that this team, you know, I don't know if we were coming in thinking that Brett Beatty is going to, you know, be as good as he's been this year. Defensively, he's out there diving, getting dirty, looking at Lindor like playfully, like looking at Lindor like, yeah, like, you know, I like to see that. He looks like he's having fun out there on the field and at the plate.
Yeah, I think that his defensive game has impressed me the most. Really started all the way in Cincinnati, and it's great to see him now add the offensive element to the point where now Mendy can trust him. And put him in that five hole, which I find is a good spot for him. And it's given him such a confidence boost. I know he got hurt. Thankfully, you know, it's nothing serious.
Yes.
So he'll be back, I'm pretty sure, in game one against the Dodgers. But great call to, and I said this last night, you know, sit him off for the final game. Then he has two extra days off so he can rest and get himself back, you know, into form. And they didn't even need him for game three against Pittsburgh. So hopefully everything, you know, works out as we get set for the series against the Dodgers. And, you know, one person we won't be seeing is JD Martinez. Yet, still not coming back, not going to be here for the West Coast road trip. So, you know, maybe soon thereafter. How are you feeling right now with this lineup without JD Martinez? You still, are you okay with it right now? And just say, you know what, when JD's ready, bring him up.
Thankfully, we're not pressed for him right now. Thankfully, we're not in need. I mean, we could always need a bat. You could, you know, a big bat, but we haven't been like, oh no, there's a lack of power on this team, or there's a lack of, you know, there's a lack of a cleanup hitter. Or, you know, I like that we have that option of, hey, take your time. We have that choice of, hey, we have DJ Stewart right now. We have, we're able to put whoever we want at the edge. You got Tyrone Taylor who could hit the ball out the park and hit the ball all over the park. You know what I mean?
I think the fact that DJ Stewart is finally starting to hit and starting to warm up, you know, leads me to believe that it's okay to just, you know, when you're ready, JD, we'll bring you back. Take your time, you know, because we signed him at the end of spring training. He only, what, there was only a few days less of spring training. Yeah, hasn't had a proper time to kind of get ready and be
get up to speed. Least, on,
yeah, be game time ready and stuff like that.
I think when he comes back, though, what happens when he comes back? And who you think goes down? And while you think about that, let me just ask, I think it's going to be such a good, you know, option to have DJ Stewart batting lefty, JD Martinez as a righty. Either you could put them in as pinch hitters or as DHs throughout the game until, you know, that starter gets tired and gets switched to a lefty or righty. And then you pull. It's going to be that depth. Shout out to David Stearns, man. David Stearns. I'm sorry if we're going off course, but David Stearns is literally, he's put together a team that some people just didn't understand what he does and why he's one of the best baseball minds, is because he doesn't have to have the biggest name. He doesn't have to, you know, get the top dollar player. He's gotten guys that were good, has potential, and he's grabbing them. And hey, let's see your potential. Let's bring out your full potential. Someone like Sean Manaea, who's been pitching great for us. Somebody who, you know, people who were given up on in some cases. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, you'd look at the rotation, right? And you mentioned Sean Manaea. He could possibly be a free agent next year. So he's working on his next contract. Adrian Hauser is going to be a free agent. Quintana's a free agent. Luis Severino, who, wow, man, what a performance he had going into six innings. Like, just seeing a pitcher get to six innings is just makes me so happy at this point in time. But like, these guys, they have something to fight for because their baseball careers are on the line this season if they don't perform well. And Luis Severino
knows that.
Definitely knows that. And he was one of the guys that I said at the beginning of free agency, that's a guy I want to take a chance on. If I'm going to take a chance on any pitcher, it's going to be Luis Severino because he's pitched in New York to success for most of his career. I mean, we're talking about, you know, DeGrom being the ace of the Mets and Severino being the ace of the Yankees at the time. And just to see him, you know, come back into form, I know it's early, but these early signs have been encouraging, at least to me. And hopefully he builds up the stamina, lowers the walks. Same with everybody else, because a lot of the walks has been there. But, you know, like you said, David Stearns has been putting together such depth, which I thought we had at the beginning of the last season, and we really didn't. Fool's gold.
To now, it was nothing. You see in retrospect, in hindsight, you're like, oh, that was nothing. Like, what did you think we had there?
Yeah, yeah. And I want to get to something else that David Stearns has done very well. But you did ask about who would go down because of, you know, JD Martinez coming up. And because he has an option, I'm more inclined to say that, you know, DJ Stewart is the guy to go on down. But your answer and your thought on why he has to stay up makes total sense to me. And is a reason why I would probably keep him up here. And the only other guy I would think that they would send down would probably be Zach Short if they decide. Because then you can have, I guess, McNeil move around and play multiple positions. And obviously Joey Wendell's there. And if Brett Beatty is healthy and playing, you really don't need Zach Short. So he would be the only other guy, I would think.
I think it's Zach Short for sure. I think it's Zach Short. Shout out to Zach Short. You're playing good, buddy. But in this situation, I think that having DJ Stewart up there and for situational hitting,
absolutely,
DH option, pinch hitting, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And now going back to what we were talking about with David Stearns, just like how amazing is not only the depth, how well this bullpen has been constructed right now. I mean, to the fact that, you know, we released Michael Tonkin and now he's back. We got money.
Yeah, we traded him to the Twins, right?
Yeah.
For some money. Some cash considerations, and then they waived them or something.
We picked up waivers, and we got them right back for free.
Stearns is just a magician. Like, I don't know what is, you know, my baseball mind is too small for what Stearns is doing and what he has in the works and planning for this team. Like you said, a lot of this rotation are pinching for their next contract this year. And he knows that. That's a part of, you know, the whole bringing them here and making them work for, you know, they're going to pitch their best. Next year, a lot of money goes off the books. We can have a whole new starting rotation next year. I don't want to get so far ahead of ourselves, but like David Stearns has some really good plans and his bullpen, starting with keeping Drew Smith here, who's someone who, when Drew Smith would come into the game, no offense, Drew, people would say, oh, no.
Yeah, it's over. Right there.
All right, guys, we're out of here. It's over. You know, he's going to give it up. Having brought back Ottavino for less than what he wanted, right?
Yeah, I think it actually evens out once you, like, it underlying contract rules, I think it evens out.
Brooks Raley is there. Of course, Diaz is back, and he's been great. But a player like Reed Garrett, like,
yeah.
Where the hell did Reed Garrett? Where did he
journeyman, man?
Yeah, like this dude is spinning the ball, and David Stearns. A lot of these pitches that he got had that spin on the ball where those balls are just dropping out. Sean Garrett, I think he had, like, I don't even know the stat that I seen recently, but he's really good also.
Look, we all know that the Mets have had a hard time getting through six innings with their starting pitching since the beginning of the season.
Right.
And Edwin Diaz was unavailable for game two against Pittsburgh after pitching two consecutive games in a row. And they go to Reed Garrett for two innings. Not only does he get all six outs.
He strikes them all out, right?
Strikes them all out. I mean, you could not have asked for a more complete performance than you got from Reed Garrett. And, you know, on top of that, all the guys that you've mentioned, two big takeaways for the bullpen. I'm really glad you brought up Ottavino because I thought that was a big move in bringing him back. But these other two things, and you tell me if you agree with me. One is the need for two lefties in the bullpen, which I have been asking for years and has not been properly done until this year with Brooks Raley and Jake Diekman. That way, you know, we're not
burning out that left arm.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You have another option. All right. You pitched yesterday or 2 days in a row. Diekman, you come in or you have that option. Depth.
Yeah. The depth that you need. The other one is bringing in Jorge Lopez and not just bringing him in, but I don't know if you saw him during the World Baseball Classic and how well he pitched then.
I'm Puerto Rican. So I've watched the Puerto Rico games and I'm familiar with Jorge Lopez. And when I heard he was coming here, I was like, oh, he's going to pitch great. You got Diaz there, like kind of like a big bro, or you know, you got Lindor there. He kind of feels real comfortable. You know, it's a big part of player success on teams. Like sometimes you could go to a team and you're just not feeling the vibe sometimes, and that affects your play. You see players go somewhere else and prosper, and it's because they maybe because of the comfortability.
And I think what also helps him as well is the fact that they brought in Team Puerto Rico's bullpen coach Jose Rosado. That was huge for Jorge Lopez, who pitched, like I said, pitched so well for Team Puerto Rico, Edwin Diaz as well, to have that known, you know, I guess, coach to come in and, you know, help you out and make you feel comfortable, I think is such a big deal for this team and for that bullpen.
Yeah, and I totally forgot that they brought, I'm honestly, that slipped my mind. I totally forgot that they brought him in from Team Puerto Rico's bullpen to be our bullpen coach. That slipped my mind, bro.
Let me ask you this now, because there's been talk about this during the weekend, and I don't know how much, like, I buy into it, but, you know, Edwin Diaz, as well, he's been pitching a tick a little lower on the speed on his pitches. Do you have any concern there? I take it to him not going 100% full bore this early into the season, just coming back, you know, from the injury, although he was out for the entire season. I think he's taking his time, especially now that he is fully into pitching back-to-back games if he has to. I think that they're going to take it slow with Edwin Diaz. I think he's okay. I just want to know your thoughts on that.
He gave up a home run the other night, but even with that, I was like, I'm not worried. You know what I mean? I'm not worried. And I agree with you. Maybe he's not trying to go full throttle. It's 2 weeks in, 3 weeks in. You know what I mean? He doesn't need to throw his hardest, even though it's fun to see, you know, having him, I think it was Monday night, having him come into the game and having that night light show, this new light show that Citi Field has when he comes in for night games. It was exciting. You know what I mean? Like, I love seeing him out there. And maybe his fastball isn't what it was 2 years ago, but I'm not worried at all. He's still one of the best closers in the game, if not the.
Carlos Mendoza, you kind of seeing both sides of the story with him from the beginning, you know, that tough 0-5 start to get these guys to 10-8 and to have that 10-3 run since going 0-5. You know, when he first came in here, there was always the talk, oh man, you're bringing in a Yankee coach. Oh, he's a new coach and a young coach. And when he first started talking and doing these press conferences, I was really impressed by him.
He didn't look rattled. He didn't look like nervous. He didn't look like he was, it's his first official managerial job, but he didn't look like a fish out of water to me. He looked very much comfortable and confident. And some people took that as they misunderstood it in a way. Some people,
yeah,
they're like, oh, he doesn't look ready. He looks nervous, but he looks good to me. He looks
no,
good.
Yeah, we definitely saw the nervous side from first-time coaches in Mickey Callaway and in Luis Rojas, and I don't get that feeling from Carlos Mendoza, you know, especially watching also the two different sides we got to see of Buck. You know, we got to see the good Buck in 2022. We got to see a different Buck game in 2023. Yeah.
I feel like Mendoza is a great hire. You know what I'm saying? I feel like he's experienced. He's well-traveled. He's not traveled throughout the league, but he knows baseball. I feel like you can't be scared of every manager at some point had their first managerial year. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't think we're going to win every game after this, right? There's going to be some times that we may question him, but just think of your first time at on a job for that first year. You might make some mistakes. You still getting the feel of it. I feel like he's got the respect of the team already. I feel like they're believing in whatever the plan is that they're going into, the process that should be trusted. I feel like they're backing them in the way they're playing, even with players like Lindor, who I consider one of the captains, if not the captain of this team without being named that, not playing well. Just like Nimmo, who's one of those other leaders who can be named the captain, who isn't playing at his best. Well, Pete McNeil and all these other guys, when you get the rest of the team playing great, that's a credit to the coaching staff and, you know, having these guys coming off the bench cold. And like Joey Wendell the other night, like, dude was frozen on the bench and still just came in, clutch, hit.
You know, Will Salmon wrote an article most recently on The Athletic kind of talking about the effect of Mendoza on this team and, you know, how he has helped turn DJ Stewart around, how, you know, how he is not, you know, not really doing these, you know, big time meetings before game, but reaching out to the players personally and being personable with each and every person. And I think that's a nice little touch from Mendy, seeing him work with every person individually and then bringing them together as a team. And that's why, you know, I believe that they are where they are right now, 10-8, getting ready for this West Coast trip coming up. But once again, I'm here with my guy, Carlos, Vintage Mets in the house. And Carlos, let's talk about this West Coast trip, because they got the Dodgers, they got the San Francisco Giants that they're going to see. First game up, Sean Manaea going up against a guy who spurned us this offseason, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. What are your thoughts on that game and the series against the Dodgers? What you want to see this Met team do?
I want to see this Met team, you know, the Dodgers, before the season started, everyone was really scared of the super team that they're building over there. They have Shohei, that lineup in the that Dodger lineup, how they've been playing is similar to what we thought this lineup would be, where the bottom half of the lineup just isn't that as good as the top half. You know, this whole lineup of ours is playing well. The Dodgers bottom half, I don't watch the Dodgers games, but I've been doing some research on this next series that's coming up, and they're not playing as that great.
The Dodgers don't have the depth in the rotation like the Mets do right now. And, you know, with Yamamoto only being able to pitch once a week, that doesn't help either. And, you know, they're still waiting for, I think it's Walker Buehler to come back, and they're still waiting for Dustin May. And, you know, it's kind of been tough on the Dodgers trying to get through. And we've experienced it last season, right? We had half of a rotation that was out. We were only getting three or four innings from each of our, you know, starters. And as of right now, I'm looking at the pitching probables. The Dodgers on Saturday and Sunday don't have any pitchers listed. Obviously, the first game is Sean Manaea against Yamamoto, but the pitcher that I'm most intrigued to see pitch in this series for the Mets is Jose Buto, right? Jose Buto has had two really great starts to start the year. This is the biggest test right now for him, is this Dodgers lineup. If he can get through this Dodgers lineup and do what he has done the first two games of the season, he does not come out of this rotation for the rest of the season.
Yes, yes, yes. Leave that man up here. Don't let him go anywhere. It's a big test. You know, they got Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Will Smith, Freddie Freeman. They're a good team over there, man. This guy Jose Buto, he could really solidify his spot this weekend. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that. You got Sean Manaea, you have Hauser and Buto, or is it?
It's gonna go Manaea Friday, Saturday Jose Buto, and yes, then Sunday will be Adrian Hauser. Okay. And look, what we saw, David Stearns do this offseason and how he assembled this rotation. I think that we are getting a lot of tests this year to see who is going to return. And I don't think he's going to create the rotation like he did last season by doing all this free agency stuff. Maybe he'll go after a top line ace, maybe to go along with Senga. But if Jose Buto is that guy and stays in the rotation, that's one less, you know, contract you have to worry about that you could spend on Pete Alonso and maybe go after Juan Soto. And also, guess who's pitching lights out in the minors right now? Christian Scott. That could be another guy to add to the rotation. So the Mets have this depth. You talked about it. The Mets have this depth, and it's great to see. And I just am really focused in on this Jose Buto, you know, start. I mean, we saw him on Sunday. He was lights out, man.
So good, dude. So good. Every time I looked up, the players were swinging off balance. He was getting strikeouts, 9 strikeouts and 6. As a team, they struck out 14. Man, I was like, 2 more strikeouts to have 16 strikeouts on 16's retirement day. That would have been perfect. But yeah, Jose Buto, he looks great. He could really be the real deal and solidify that spot on Saturday. Damn, I'm excited to see that.
On offense, I think this is a big trip for Francisco Lindor. Oh, he's got to get going in this
he's
trip.
Pressing, he's struggling. I agree with you. This is a big trip. But what happens if he stays like this? What do you think?
I don't know, man. Like, I even put it out there on Twitter. It's like, I know he's going to come out of this. You know he's going to come out of this, but how long do you keep him in the three hole to figure it out?
Yes.
Like at some point,
you drop him.
And I'm not saying drop him 7, 8, 9. Something's got to give for him. And I just don't know what it is. The struggle has been real. He got a base hit in the final game of this Pittsburgh series, and he's gotten 4 hits in a couple of games. But man, you just want to see him succeed so bad and come through here, because you know he can do it. 30-30 guy last season. 2022 had a great season. Man, I'm really pulling for Francisco, and I just hope that he finds his way on this trip to come through.
I know that he struggles in the top half of the season, in the beginning of the season. He's done that for a lot of his career. But this right here, it's like, it wasn't expected as bad as he's been. And of course, I feel like he's going to break out of it. But like you said, what happens? How long of a leash does he have in the 2-3 hole? Well, Marte is at 2 right now, right?
Marte's at 2, Nimmo at 1.
Yeah, so how long does he have?
Yeah, it's not like he got hot in spring either. Like, he has been struggling from the start of spring training. Now, you remember last year, what he was doing for Team Puerto Rico in the World Baseball Classic kind of cooled off as soon as the season began. And once he had his baby around, like, I think the end of May, June-ish, he kicked it in high gear, 30 for 30 guy. And you don't just go 30 for 30 and drop off the face of the planet.
Dude, it's very hard to justify too, to my friends who like try to have jokes on Lindor or call him out. I try to defend him. You know, he's my guy.
Look, we all backed him.
Yeah, it's difficult right now.
Yeah. And you know, Sunday, big opportunity, bases loaded with the crowd, you know, as light as it was, I never heard them louder for that. I don't know if it was the bottom of the 7th inning. I think it was the bottom of the 7th. Bases loaded, an opportunity, and he pops up the first pitch. And you're like, man, this could have been the chance.
Oh, man, it hurts my heart. Yeah, it's my heart to see him play like that, man, because I love Lindor. You know, I think he's a great defensive shortstop. Why doesn't he just bat righty? I hate when they, like, make him bat left. I feel like he's better on his right side. Like,
way better. Career-wise, it's a little more even, but this season to start, I mean, I think he's like 0-80 right now from the left side and batting over 300 from the right side.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm hoping for good things on this West Coast trip for him and for the Mets in general. If they could come away with a winning trip, that would be wonderful. I wanted them to get over 500 by the time they got to this trip, knowing that it's going to be a tough trip. It always is. The West Coast trip is always tough. So knowing now that there are 10-8 going to LA is just a great turnaround for the New York Mets. But Carlos, before I let you go, you are vintage Mets. So I wanted to get your thoughts in. Some of your favorite vintage gear that you've got, because you style it all the time on Instagram. We see it at the games. What are some of your favorite pieces of vintage Mets gear?
I have a lot of pieces that are my favorite. I'm really attached asked a bunch of them. So I get that question often, like, yo, what's your favorite piece? And it's hard. You know what I mean? Some of my most recent purchases, I'll show you this shirt that I have. It's within the last, this last year I bought. This right here says New York World Beaters, has Frank Viola, John Franco, Doc, David Cohn, and Ron Darling. They're like out of space. If you look, there's like planets and stars in the background. Earth is the ball right here. Another one I have right here. I love these caricature tees. This one right here, Buddy Ball, Lucy Goosey, where it's Frank Viola, John Franco, Howard Johnson, Buddy Harrelson, rest in peace, Buddy, right there in the middle when he was our manager. Daryl Strawberry up top and Doc Gooden on that one. This one is from...
That's got to be 1990, right?
Absolutely. Look at that. Okay.
Bam. Yeah. If Buddy was the manager, that's definitely 90. Strawberry was still there. He leaves the next season, or he leaves at the end of the season.
And these shirts, I believe, is, I think, 91. Just like this one, which is similar to the one I have on. This one says New York Heat, where all five pitchers were on the mound. Ron Darling, David Cohn, Doc. The same characters that are on this shirt. I love these shirts, man. Some of my other favorite pieces is, you know, I'll show you some of the trinkets that I have on. I have on this hat, I got a Lady Met pin.
That's before Mrs. Met.
Yes, this is officially... Lady Met. The person I got this from, she was in a group called the Lady Boosters. I got some research on it when she told me. And this is a Mr. Met pin. My light is blowing it out. I have these SGA giveaway rings. This one has Mr. Met on it. And this one is just the plain old Skyline Met script right here.
Yeah, that's nice.
And I have like these cool like vintage charm bracelets where you see the Mets logo. You see Lady Met right there. You see Shea Stadium.
Yeah.
A glove, Mr. Met right here, a bat, a ball, or this disposable Mr. Met camera from 2004.
I remember those.
Yeah.
I definitely remember them selling those at Shea Stadium. So, like, how do you go about searching for this gear? Like, you know, because 1990 that's from. Like, unless you had it from 1990.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, how does someone go and search
everywhere,
for that?
Dude, I literally got stuff everywhere. So I have a hat right here. I'll show you that. One of my oldest pieces, this is from around 1965. Six panel. You see the front panel is there. And one of the, obviously has the leather lining on the inside. This is just a hat insert that I keep in there to, like, keep it sturdy. But the leather in... lining, and one of my favorite tags that I own. Man, I wish I could get a better view of it, but it's this right here. It says Union Made at the top, official New York Mets. Never seen that tag before. It's a beautiful hat, and it's in like absolute beautiful condition.
Now, yeah, it looks great.
Same hat in beat up condition. I had the same hat in absolutely just beat up. And I would never wash this hat. You know, I know the tricks of washing hats, restoring hats. But this one right here, I would never wash because it's so old that it'll probably, like, kind of, like, start to, like, disintegrate. You know what I mean?
Classic.
Yeah.
Absolute classic.
Yeah, I have a bunch of shirts and hats. I got, like, I can go through a bunch. But if you tune into the page, it's Vintage, VNTG underscore Mets. I like to, like, showcase my pieces. I've recently started talking about ticket stubs. I got a bunch of ticket stubs that a friend of mine who's been a fan since 1967.
Nice.
His son is not into baseball. And he was like, hey, Carlos, I see you all the time, you know, dressed in your Mets clothes, and we talk Mets, and I have a gift for you. So he gave me, like, about 80 ticket stubs from games that he's went to from 1967 on. You know, here are a couple. And what I do is I'll look up this game, April 14th, 1970, and go search the info of the game and try to make some content out of it. That's some of my new stuff that I've been doing. But just give a history on, you know, what I like to call, and pretty much what is the largest collection of vintage Mets clothing and apparel in the world. Is pretty much like a museum quality collection that I could that I've curated.
Yeah, I've always been, I don't know if I'll ever collect as vintage stuff as how you have collected all the great memorabilia and stuff that you have. But I do love just tuning into the content and watching everything that you have put out there. And today, probably about an hour before, you know, recording this, I posted my ticket stub, and I still had the parking ticket as well from the first game that I ever went to.
Dude,
it's funny because it, you know, we were talking about Shea Stadium's 60th anniversary today. They faced the Pittsburgh Pirates then. They faced the Pittsburgh Pirates today. And my first game was April 5th, 1998. Coincidentally,
they faced against
the Pittsburgh Pirates. Wow. I still remember it. Masato Yoshi making his rookie debut, and the Mets win 7-0. Gard Alfonso home run, and right before we had Mike Piazza traded. Oh, wow.
So this one is some content that I made yesterday. It's April 16th, 1971, and look who they played? Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
I did some content, and I found out that Don Clendenin, actually, Tom Seaver, he struck out 14 people that day, right? And three of those came off of Roberto Clemente. Clemente struck out three times that day. And he one of his quotes after was, it's tough to hit Tom Seaver on a good day, but it's also even tougher hitting him on a day that's cold and windy like today. I was like, wow, he just struck out Roberto like it wasn't nothing. But Don Clendenin, he had hit a home run that game, right? And it was the game-winning home run. It was the only run scored. But he struck out twice. One of those at-bats, he had runners on first and second. I think it was Cleon Jones and Buddy Harrelson, somebody. And he struck out. And later that game, he said, yo, I couldn't control my anxiety. I was too eager. If you're a hitter, if you're a good hitter, you hit with runners on base. You don't hit home runs. It's one of the coolest quotes I've read. Basically saying, yo, you don't have to hit home runs. If you're a good hitter, you hit with runners on base. You don't just only hit home runs. This is after him hitting the game-winning home, you know, the home run that won the game. But knowing that you hit when runners are on the base, something that a lot of these guys in today's baseball world should adopt.
I definitely shared this with a good friend of mine. He's been on the podcast before, Danny Torres, who's the you know, host and you know, produces the Talkin' 21 podcast, which honors Roberto Clemente. So I wanted to share that, you know, with him, considering that Tom Seaver struck Clemente out three times in that bat. But what is so cool about this content that you're creating now is that, you know, we all know a lot of the history of the Mets. If you're a huge Mets fan, you know the history. But to go game by game, you know, specific games, and get these little, you know, these little stories out of them, I think that creates some amazing content.
So here, this guy gave me, I told you, like over 80. He also gave me like Jets tickets, ticket stubs, but I'm not a Jets fan. So my friend who he knows the guy also, he is a Jets fan. I gave him all the Jets ones because I don't need everything. You know what I mean? What I'm going to do with it? But this guy, he also went to the 1973 World Series where we lost, but he went to game 3, game 4, and game 5.
And I think they won 2 out of 3.
Yeah, so these are going to be the contest coming up later in the season. Got a bunch of ticket stubs. And what's cool also, Anthony, sorry to continue.
No.
He also like wrote on the back of some of these. So some of them, they're like, some of them later in the season from 69, they're like down 3 games. You know, they're 3 games back. And then in 3 games, he's wrote on the black, on the back, Seaver. Oh, man, it's like a story that he like literally laid out. And well, not a whole story, but little pieces of the game. And I just go looking for other stuff and, you know, try to add to that.
No, that's...
I'm glad you're enjoying it, man.
No, seriously, I am. I'm a very into history, especially for this team. And just this whole process, I'm going to continue to be looking out for these clips. I will continue to share them and make sure everyone gets to see them. Just great stuff that you do. And, you know what's great about it, too, is we don't have ticket stubs anymore, man. And that's right. A frustrating thing. I wish we did. And then they started going to paper, and now everything... It's everything digital. Is digital, man, through the phone. I wish I do have from last season. If you're a ticket member, they gave you that gold ticket, which I hold dearly. They didn't do it this year.
But the year before also they had like a whole like video, like a little screen in it. And this year, we was disappointed, my lady and I. We were disappointed that we didn't get anything this year.
Yeah.
Some Carlos, of the other tickets I have is he's given me 1969 World Series tickets and NLCS tickets from 1969. But on the back, I think he has Nolan Ryan's World Series that he pitched in. I think it's the only World Series that – I don't know if it's game three or five. I got game three and one of those. I don't know. But I have it somewhere. Well, actually, it's under this computer sitting on a stand. I could go looking for them, but we'll take another
week. I don't know if you got to frame those things.
Yeah, my friends told me – nice one of my case. Friends said that I should make like a coffee table out of it or put them in resin in a coffee table. I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to just – I don't know what to do. If you guys –
maybe it's some kind of case. Like, you know how they have for the baseball – cards,
okay,
something like that, maybe to hold them and keep them.
There's so many of them. They're like 80 plus.
You need 80 plus cases.
There you go.
At least the World Series ones. Yeah, like those. Right. Those are right. Different.
So I have an 86 one. I have 2000s. The 2000 one tickets. 2015 ones.
Carlos, man. Dude, I could talk to you for hours.
Yeah,
we could talk for hours, and this won't be the last time we do this. I appreciate you coming on here.
Anytime.
Just the stories we were able to talk about and your whole collection and everything. You know, I'm a huge supporter of you, and I just appreciate you giving me this time to, you know, talk with you and do a podcast, because it's been a long time coming. I should have done this a lot sooner, but I appreciate your time today. And just let everyone know, you know, your Twitter, your handles, your social media, how they can interact with you and what you got going on.
Vintage Mets, VNTG _ Mets. I am a vintage Mets apparel collector, a fan culture curator. I am I came up with the catchphrase, I love it here, where it's basically an orange heart and a blue heart as the word love. I have a Discord called the Metsiverse Discord where they talk all day. We're talking on there, sharing, Mets info. I have a hat dropping very soon. Stay in tune with the page, VNTG _ Mets. Anthony, shout out to you and the Subway to Shea. I love what you're doing here. I literally remember when you started. You know what I mean? I was like, wow, this dude is it looks good. Like how you and where you've come, you just continue to excel. And I wish you nothing but, you know, continued success. And it's coming from the continued hard work. So, you know what I'm saying? Nothing is given. You've yep. been busting your tail for this. You know what I mean? Not for this interview, but, you know, everything you have going for you. And I just know that you're going to continue to get better and continue to get even bigger looks and bigger people on here. So make sure y'all tune in and stay tuned into this podcast.
I appreciate you, Carlos. And we're on this journey together to, you know, make this team, make this fan base, you know, as fun as we can and to enjoy each other's time. And, you know, we're always seeing each other at Citi Field and, you know, hanging out. And it's really an honor to, you know, call you a friend and just, you know, hang out and, you know, enjoy this conversation. I really appreciate it. And I thank you so much. And your interview is just as important as any interview that I do. So thanks again for your time. And I really appreciate it. Carlos from Vintage Mets. Appreciate you, my brother.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you, man.
All right. That's going to wrap up the Subway to Shea podcast. You can follow us on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Subway to Shea. Listen and subscribe to the Subway to Shea podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and watch and subscribe on YouTube. That helps me out a lot. If you enjoyed this episode and enjoy Subway to Shea in general, leave a review, give me 5 stars. That helps out, and hit that like button. Yes. With that said, thank you so much for tuning in and helping this podcast grow each and every week. You're a major part of the success of the Subway to Shea brand, and I appreciate you so much. So for Anthony Rivera, from Carlos of Vintage Mets, this is the Subway to Shea podcast. Always remember, let's go Mets.